This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
We're talking this hour about the coronavirus, COVID-19, and how it is ripping through every facet of our world. And alongside the risk of infection or even death, the pandemic is causing shockwaves throughout the world economy. So many people have already lost their jobs, and many, many more are likely to lose them in the weeks ahead. On the other side of this pandemic, whenever we get there, our world may look very different indeed. Staff writer John Cassidy covers economics and politics for The New Yorker. Hi, John.
Hi, David.
John, first I should ask, how's your family? How's everybody doing?
Everything is good at the moment. Thank you very much for asking.
Good. Now, I know this is early days, but is there any back-of-the-envelope calculation about how many people are likely to lose their jobs because of this situation? This Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, has said could go up to 20%.
The way economists are looking at this, I've been speaking to them in the last couple of days, they think that because of the lockdowns and all the other impacts, consumer spending could fall by as much as a third in the next few months. And if you feed that through the economy, consumer spending is about two-thirds of the entire economy. So that's a huge hit. And if you just feed that through into employment decisions, you get some very large unemployment numbers. As you said, Mnuchin's talking about 20% unemployment. He backtracked that a bit, saying it was only a mathematical calculation. But I spoke to an economic historian yesterday, Barry Eichengreen over at Berkeley, who's an expert on the Great Depression. And he told me that the economic impact of the COVID-19 virus is likely to be bigger than the Great Depression in the initial stages, at least. In the Great Depression, it took 3 or 4 years to get up to 25% unemployment. If we're talking about going to 20% unemployment in a few months here, that really is something completely out of the order of anything we've seen in the past.
Who's going to get hit the hardest? What sectors of the economy are likely to be hit really especially hard?
Well, everybody is at risk, ultimately, if the economy totally spirals down. But in the first instance, it's what they call the consumer-facing industries, because consumers are basically going to be locked in their apartments in a lot of our cities for the foreseeable future. And only essential consumption, food and drink and things like that, will even be open. So it looks like gig workers, airline workers, anybody in transportation, anybody in hotels, that entire sector looks like it's going to be devastated. In fact, already is being devastated.
Have any modern economies ever had to grapple with the vast majority of business essentially seizing up, stopping in whole regions of the country for weeks at a time?
No, I asked that question to Barry Eichengreen, very prominent economic historian at Berkeley yesterday, and he said he couldn't think of any precedent whatsoever for what we're going through now. People point to the Black Death, but as Eichengreen said, it was a very different type of economy, much more rural and a different time completely.
How does it compare to 2008?
This is much bigger than 2008. In 2008, we had a shock in the financial system, you'll recall. Basically, the banks seized up. But the consumer sector did start to falter, and firms start to lay people off. There was a big increase in unemployment in late 2008 and early 2009, and the unemployment rate went up to 10% eventually. But, you know, that's nothing like what we're seeing now. Effectively, we've got a government-imposed shutdown of, you know, 50% of the economy. Maybe it'll go up to even more than that. And, you know, closing down the economy is a deliberate strategy here. It's not bad. It's not necessarily a bad thing. We have to close down the economy to some extent in order to get a handle on the virus. Then once we get a handle on the virus, we can reopen things. And theoretically, you know, the comeback could be relatively rapid. So the government's role is to basically keep everybody and all the businesses and people on life support while we're in this sort of intensive care unit. And then when we get out the other side, we can repay some of the loans. We can, you know, get things back to normal. But it's really a completely unprecedented situation. As I say, I think it's a sort of economic life support operation is what we need.
What's your level of confidence in the economic minds that are running things in Washington?
That's a bit of a loaded question. Obviously, the initial reaction was terrible. I mean, up until last week, they were just talking about a sort of $8 billion stimulus, which in a $21 trillion economy is absolutely nothing. I think the collapse in the markets and what we've seen in Italy has concentrated minds. And over the last few days, we're starting to see some real progress in economic thinking, at least. What the Federal Reserve did over the weekend was very important just to prevent a full-on financial crash. They basically rolled out a lot of the lending programs they introduced in 2008. People don't like the side of the Fed, you know, lending unlimited amounts of money to the banks and big financial institutions, but it really is necessary in a situation like this, but otherwise the financial markets will just seize up. And then the other side of things is the fiscal side, and the White House has basically done a 180 U-turn over the last few days, and is now proposing a $1 trillion stimulus, including sending checks of at least $1,000 to people, providing some sort of help to small businesses who can't make their payrolls, bailing out the airlines with loans or whatever. And it's a, you know, reasonable sized package of $1 trillion. It's about the same, slightly larger than the Obama stimulus in 2009. My own feeling is that's not going to be sufficient either, but at least it's a first step.
What about the guy who's got a gig job and loses it? What about people that are put out of work very quickly because they have a four-day-a-week job at an airport or an Uber driver? What can the government do for ordinary people who are hugely and immediately affected economically by this crisis?
Well, I mean, I've written an article saying we should adopt Andrew Yang's universal basic income for a few months. And just send people, everybody in the country, a check for $1,000 every month, or maybe every head of household a check for $1,500 or whatever.
Everybody, or based on need?
No, well, the administration is now proposing $1,000, which I don't think will be sufficient. And they're cutting it off at $1 million, at people who earn $1 million a year. If you want to cut it off, they're fine. I think it has to be pretty universal in order to help everybody. And also it's to get, you know, universal political support. I think the idea of the government supporting everybody would be politically popular, and would also help to get support for the other nasty but sort of necessary things which are going to have to be done, including providing financial support to big corporations.
As you remember well, John, there was a lot of political backlash to the bailouts that took place in the last financial crisis. What will be the politics of economic policy going forward?
The Trump administration is going to bail out some of the big corporations, including the airlines. You're already seeing quite a lot of backlash towards that. People are pointing out that over the last 10 years, the airlines have made a heck of a lot of money, and they've used a lot of it to buy back their own stock, which benefits their CEOs and senior executives who have large stock executive compensation packages. So why the heck should we bail out these scoundrels? The answer, as I said, is that when the economy reopens in whenever, September, we're going to need airlines. And if the airlines are bankrupt, it's going to take a long time to sort of reorganize and set up, et cetera. So I think there's going to have to be some bailouts. The question is, how are they structured? So I think a lot of it's going to depend on how these bailout packages are structured. And the airlines, for example, in their request, which they've submitted to the administration, are asking for unconditional loans, i.e. loans not secured by any assets. which, as you know, anybody knows who tries to get a loan from a bank, that's very difficult to get. I think that would be completely unreasonable to do that. The loan should be secured on the assets of the company, of the airlines, i.e. their planes and their landing slots, etc. So if they can't repay these loans, the taxpayer would then seize the underlying assets and there'd be some degree of safety there. That actually is what happened during the Great Depression. The Reconstruction Finance Corporation, which Herbert Hoover initially set up, and then Franklin Delano Roosevelt expanded greatly, lend a lot of money to the banks, which were in terrible trouble, and to the railroads, which were the airlines of the time. But it secured those loans on the rolling stock and the tracks, etc., of the railroads. So there was some degree of security there. I think it's just the right thing to do. And then I think in order to get public support, that's what we're going to have to go down that route this time, I think.
John, thank you so much. And thank you so much for all your writing. Keep it up. I'll give you a call soon.
Yep.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. John Cassidy is a staff writer here at The New Yorker, and we spoke on the phone just a few days ago. You can read him at newyorker.com and subscribe to his newsletter.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.